as a photographer, you're up against it. And then, you know, often there's an art director who's got an opinion. And then there's a creative director who's got an opinion. Then the makeup artist has got an opinion. Then the hairdresser throws in another opinion. And at one point...
This is where too many chefs really does kick in. Yeah,
but you know what you end up with as well? Mm. You end up with vanilla.
Yeah.
You know, and I think...
trying to keep everybody happy.
Yeah, yeah, I've been doing this a long time now. But for me going into a studio the night before, it's borderline sleepless night. What happens if? Mm. What happens if that light doesn't work? What happens if the model doesn't turn up? What happens if, whatever the scenario, you want to ensure that you're delivering 110%. Mm. And that's the magic bit. Again. Yeah,
turning that fear into kind of the buzz that gets you somewhere different. Barbering got stuck a long time with its fade. Yeah. And we've seen scissor work come back over the last kind of few years, which hairdressing were kind of involved in, I guess, more in the 90s. Whereas now it is barbershops that are properly looking to find their place in that fashion world.
Listen, it'd be wrong for me to make an assumption here, but I think that a lot of the sort of trendsetters obviously worked within traditional hairdressing, but then needed to find their niche.
Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up, and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better.
Hi, welcome to another episode of The Noble Barber. I'm here today with Alex Baron-Howe to talk, I guess image more than anything else.
Yeah.
And obviously you've been hugely involved with the British Hairdressing Awards, I guess is the thing most people would probably recognise your work from, which is all hairdressers. And I see you've kind of branched into some men's collections along the way. How are you finding now? Are you working with men's looks against women's looks?
To be honest, I suppose I don't differentiate them. It's a collection or I suppose the way that I always look at it when working with a client is it has to be a two-way conversation with the client, and I've really got to get inside their head to understand what it is that they're, you know, I suppose what drives them, what do they like to eat, where do they want, you know, what do they like to drink, all of those sort of elements, plus what fashion they like, etc., and all of that builds one picture. So I suppose I don't look at a men's collection any differently to a women's collection. I think that often it always goes a lot quicker shooting men. I think that's the truth.
The look is the look.
Yeah, the look is the look. I think that the male models or your muses or however you want to talk about it, they all, you know, they know their look, and often they're quite sort of one-dimensional. In a very positive way, but they get in, they do what they do, and then you sort of move on. So yeah, it's been good. I've been doing a fair bit with men's this last year or so, and obviously I work with George Smith,
who's done very well this year so far, hasn't he?
He seems to have won everything, which has been amazing. So yeah, it's always exciting working with him.
No, that's cool. And I mean, we were talking previously really about the changeover that. Barbering, I guess barbers are newer to the kind of fashion scene. I think, you know, if you think of women's fashions run through the 60s and 70s was a huge moment, and men's hair and certainly barbering of men's hair was kind of not involved. We seem to have found some fashion in us in the last decade or
so. Yeah, but I think that again, I suppose that isn't just down to shooting it. I think that's, with the present company accepted. But, I think that we all care a little bit more. You know, men care about fashion and they're following trends a little bit more. And I think that there's also been this, I think that obviously, you know, I mean, you'd know better than anyone, but barbering did have a real sort of, it became a real sort of standalone sector within the industry, really powerful, probably 10 years
ago. Yeah, I think just over a decade ago, it suddenly emerged.
So I think that's obviously sort of spurred it on. But then I think that we've now, it seems to be that we're bridging the gap a little bit more with, I suppose, traditional hairdressing. And whether that's just because, it just feels that the textures are a little bit softer. a little bit more lived in. I think, you know, it's an exciting time.
Yeah, I think we're certainly seeing that kind of switch that, you know, I mean, for a long, you know, barbering got stuck a long time with its fade. Yeah. And we've seen scissor work come back over the last kind of few years. You know, and lots of collections I'm seeing at the moment. You're seeing the kind of Oasis,
'90s sort of
look coming back in, which hairdressing were kind of involved in, I guess, more in the '90s, whereas now it is barbershops that are properly looking to find their place in that fashion world.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you've got hairdressers like, you know, Jodie Taylor that are really sort of driving that trend. And listen, it'd be wrong for me to make an assumption here, but I think that a lot of the sort of trendsetters obviously worked within traditional hairdressing, but then needed to find their niche. Mm. So then went into, you know, sort of dog-legged and then went into barbering and really got into it and really, really found a passion and a love for it. But then have managed to sort of, you know, I suppose have a foot in both camps, but still focusing on men, if that sort of makes sense. And I think that, again, it excites me seeing, you know, I think everyone got a little bit bored with the fade and the, you know, it became quite...
Well, it was the barbering equivalent of kind of hairdressers' Instagram of balayage, barbershops, fade.
Yeah,
which,
exactly.
You know, in its place, it's obviously got a place and it's a big part
and
of
it's
our
a skill.
World.
There's and a skill. Huge skill. Yeah, it's a huge skill to it. But I think that it's... I think that for all of us, it's always important to... there's that phrase, and they, you know, you've got to know the rules to break the rules. And no one would sort of dismiss the skill set there, but it's important that there's a bit of looseness and that we don't just put everything into one box.
The one trick pony.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that, I mean, certainly, I mean, my salons became separate, and we now do have a whole separate chain, which is our barbershops, which started kind of 11, 12 years ago. And so when you looked at that point, most of the people that were winning British men's hairdressing and so on were salons that had someone doing a bit of men's work. Now you're seeing, that kind of the barber's becoming a bit of fame in his own right. And we're starting to see that kind of celebrity, well, you could kind of draw up a list now of celebrity barbers, which you'd have struggled to have even started 10 years ago.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's only fair and right, isn't it? You know, I think it's an exciting time for it.
No, but it does. But I think that's the factor. It's got that opportunity that it's still a little bit in its early days that we've started getting those celebrities. We've got something like, you know, George, who's doing some amazing men's collections and really getting that imagery out there, which hopefully, you know, the talent that's waiting to create this new stuff isn't even in the studio yet. They're hopefully out there listening to this and getting inspired. But there's still room for that massive growth to happen.
But I think that there's... from a client point of view, obviously, you know, the barbershop and the just feels that it's a bit of a safe zone, I suppose. And I think that's quite appealing, isn't it, to a gent going in to go and get their hair cut. So I think from the culture of the barbershop is, I suppose it was a little bit lost and forgotten for a little bit of time. I think, it was always there, I suppose, but now it's sort of very much at the forefront and really sort of driving
resurgence. I think my whole career I've heard about the kind of huge men's market and varying product companies come out and talk about the huge men's market, and this huge men's market was talked about for probably the first 20 years of my life, and we'd have like four blokes come in a month and that was about it, because, you know, a lot of guys weren't. This is presumably the market that's now there and is tapped into.
Yeah.
And, you know, every barbershop has now got their look. And I guess that a lot of barbers and a lot of us are now looking to find how we transfer that look and our image of our salon into a collection.
Yeah.
Is that always the way, or is that...
I think...
Because you can tell a very wrong story with a collection that...
Yeah, I think that there's... I think, again, I suppose that the foundation is always the same, the way that I look at it, that you have to be... it has to be authentic and it has to be true to you. And I think... sadly, and again, it doesn't matter if it's just barbers or if it's just hairdressers or anywhere in the middle. I think sometimes we often go down the route of playing the game. And what I mean by that is, you know, you shoot for a specific thing. So for a collect, you know, for an award entry or whatever. And I think that absolutely that, you know, I think that there are formulas to that, but it's important that you stay true to what you really, truly believe in and what really inspires and excites you. Otherwise, I say this so many times to any of the clients that I work with. If you go down the route of shooting something and, you know, we put together whatever the collection is, but then you, and if for any reason, you know, heaven forbid, it doesn't finalize or it doesn't win or, you know, arguably it, you know, it didn't get the number one sort of top spot, then there's always a feeling that if you then look at it and you think that you've done something because that's what you should have done, you're going to hate it forever. Yeah, yeah. You have to walk away with it and think, you know what, whatever happens, I fucking love what I've just done. And when you get that right, it's so powerful. And I think that it comes across in the image.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's a great emphasis on winning awards at the moment, certainly in the barber industry. Every award that's been on the circuit is showing more and more men's stuff, more and more of that. And I always felt, certainly when we've done some pictures together, that it was the image of what we were going to try and use them for. And then competition became secondary for us. So we always got kind of a lot of mileage out of our images, and they portrayed the store and our people and who we were. Are you finding that a lot is shot for awards? Is that the primary motive?
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you've got to, it has to be led. You have to know where are you really driving this towards? Because otherwise, it's sort of, sometimes it can fall between both. Mm-hmm. I think that you're right. I think that, you know, the mileage that the stuff that that we've done together has got out of it has always been really positive. Mm. And I think that, but some of that is just simply down to, and this is something that I'm really probably trying to push back on a little bit, because I think that your typical award entry is head and shoulders. I mean, we all understand why, and you know, the focus has to be on the hair. And I think that we're in a bit of a transition period where I think that sometimes it can go against you and sometimes it definitely goes for you. But I would love to see a little bit more lifestyle, a little bit more, I suppose, freedom with it. And it's interesting. So I did a shoot actually again with George this year. We went into the studio. We were very fortunate. We spent 2 days in the studio, and we looked at it very much as a play day. You know, there was less, you know, the criteria was almost pulled back a little bit, and we shot so many different things, and you know, some of it you get a little bit lost, and you get a little bit, I suppose, especially for me, I get a little bit more excited by trying to shoot stuff that no one else has seen. So we did this like amazing stuff with lasers, and I mean, it looks amazing. But there was a period within it that we sort of, both George and I, sat down after the first day, and it was so technically challenging that it ate into our time. But secondly, you think, actually, there's no hair in it.
You can get a bit lost, don't you?
So I think that, you know, then we came back in the second day, and it was then very much, you know, right,
a bit of structure put in there,
and back onto the hair. So it's again, I think there's a bit of a fine line in finding what drives you.
But it's interesting, you know, when you look at most images, you know, certainly campaigns that you've worked on, and obviously kind of, I guess, Bedhead for Men is the one that jumps immediately to mind.
Yep.
Not that I'm negating anything else that I can't think of.
Yeah.
It is much more about that lifestyle. It's action and forward, more kind of reportage almost, that there's a little bit more looks going on.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, reportage has always been a style of photography that has excited me the most. And I think that it's because it's authentic and it's real. and obviously, you know, a lot of my career, you know, I suppose a lot of the imagery that I often created was at live events or shows, whether it was Fashion Week, whether it was men's shows, you know, Paul Smith in Milan or whatever else. But that was, you were capturing a second in time. And I've always been very excited by that. And I think that that was probably driven by the inspiration for me. And to be honest, a lot of the inspiration for me from a photography point of view, there's an incredible photographer called Ross Halfin. Actually, his son, Oliver, is also incredible. They're sort of rock and music photographers. But when you see the images, you will know, you'll know all of them. And it's just, it was, again, you're just capturing that, the realness, the sort of rawness with it. So I suppose that from a campaign point of view, you know, obviously I've spent a lot of time at TG, nearly 20 years. And I think that we were always very much behind trying to, I suppose, break from the norm. And that it wasn't a very typical collection or, you know, hair focus. It was, you know, pulled back a little bit and a bit more lifestyle. And I think, you know, again, I personally think that for a barbershop or, you know, to try and entice clients, the client looks at that and they look at everything within it and they go, yeah, that is a bit of me. As opposed to just the back of the head or the side of, you know, a beard trim or whatever else it is. You want to appeal to the full story, I suppose.
I think it's trying to get that image of what your store is.
Yeah.
So I guess certainly more so with barbers than salons, that barbers are desperately trying to kind of get their step, their place in that kind of group.
Yeah.
And their stores are so different. I mean, even between my stores, they're quite a different look, different clientele, different place. And trying to get that across is not easy.
But I think that there's often a, you know, a missed trick with that. And I think that, you know, the world has changed so much, you know, my career, which, you know, relatively speaking, I suppose is fairly short. But when you really think that, again, only really 10 years, Instagram, all the rest of the social media platforms, that means that we're always on. And, you know, again, you'll know better than anyone on the collections that we've worked together on. Often, if you go in to shoot a collection, you know, arguably it's based on you're going to, you know, the agreement is that you will end up with 4 images, 8 images, whatever it is, right? You'll get rid of, I mean, that will, you've used that within a week. Yeah. Then what? So I think that there is, to me, the untapped sort of route as well is to then really look at the additional reportage. So what else inspires you in your shop? What else, what makes you tick? What trends are you looking at that also, you know, really sort of, you know, adds, you know, joins the dots up into what you're selling, who your client is, how that, you know, how you're sort of portraying your total image. You know, we used to talk about it slightly we used to have a course that we used to run called Total Concept. But to me, the total concept sort of, you know, analogy is, that's the most important bit. It is 360. You know, every element needs to sing the same song. And then when it then comes to, you know, down to your staff, whether it's then down to other creatives that are on a shoot, again, you've all got to be singing the same song from the same hymn sheet. Otherwise, you know, if one person or one barber is doing their own thing, sometimes it can sort of cut through, but it can also mean that they get a little bit lost within the middle of it. So it's the full picture is the important bit.
Yeah. Which is kind of hard to get your head around when you're starting out. I mean, you know, you work with one of our teams who'd never shot anything before and do need a lot of hand holding.
Yeah. I enjoy that though.
Yeah, and I think that's, I think, you know, I think every photographer I've worked with has that idea of how they like to work, and it tends to work better that you're finding photographers that you enjoy working with, that you like their style and you go with them.
I think, again, you hit the nail on the head. For me, For me as a photographer, it's the same. As in, it'd be very easy to just sit back and, you know, work with everyone that comes and wants to do something together. But you've got to make sure that you're compatible and that you're also, you're pushing each other in the right direction. You know, sometimes, especially on a shoot, you know, they're high, there's, you know, high risk, not high risk. There's a lot at stake, you know, particularly from the client side, there's obviously a lot of money put on the table. But then from the sort of creative side and as a photographer, you want to make sure that you're doing it, that you're adding value to this conversation, that you're not, you know, too easy. You just turn around and go, yeah, you know, if you came to me, I want to shoot that. We can shoot that. But if for any reason we don't think that, it's not if it's right or wrong, I think that it's, could you do it in a different way? And during the day, it's got to be a safe zone where you can turn around and go, you know what, actually, if you look at that, I think we can do better. We should, you know, you've got to try and challenge every element of it. I've always looked at it as well that there's got to be a lot of ambition in the room, because we all want to be up there. You want to be surrounded by the best. And I think that, you know, I always say the same thing. If you're the smartest person in the room, then you're in the wrong room. And that, then what I mean by that is that everyone's got to have their skill set and their forte. Mm. And, you know, then it's a football team, right? That equivalent,
yep.
that
no,
the,
absolutely.
The equivalent yeah. sort of mindset there, that everyone brings their element of skill. Mm. When you put it together, that's when the magic happens.
Yep. The big difference for a lot of people is getting into the studio. So, I mean, you know, you spend time now, obviously, with Still, that's you know, salon owning and all that kind of proper hairdressing stuff.
Proper hairdressing.
And, you know, it's a very different world. If you're used to being behind the chair, and I love being behind the chair, it's always been my favourite bit of the whole industry. But you come out of that very comfortable zone where you're primarily in control and go into a studio.
It's the best bit.
It's so exciting. Yeah. The thought of having that be screwed because you're kind of clashing the whole time with everyone around you.
Yeah.
I think, be heartbreaking, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think that there is an element of then taking your A game to a studio. Mm. And I think that there is, you know, even, you know, I've been doing this a long time now, but for me going into a studio the night before, it's borderline sleepless night. What happens if?
Mm.
What happens if that light doesn't work? What happens if the model doesn't turn up? What happens if, whatever the scenario? And I think that's where you find the, when you're living on the edge of comfort. There's a phrase in there, I can't remember what it is, but nothing ever good happens from being comfortable or something like that. So I think that, you know, the element of a hairdresser or a barber going into an environment where, how is this going to be sort of perceived, is then you want to ensure that you're delivering 110%. Mm. And that's the magic bit again.
Yeah. Turning that fear into kind of the buzz that gets you somewhere different.
Because I think that, you know, and again, you know, if I look at my history, you know, we were very fortunate. You know, for 20 years, you know, we had a studio actually around the corner in Battersea, as you know, and we worked there together. But even for us, when we were shooting in the studio, as opposed to shooting in an external studio, everything's there.
Yeah.
So what immediately happens is borderline complacency, because you'll turn up a little bit later. Then you'll turn up and you go and have a coffee, and then you'll have flick through your emails, you do all this other stuff, because the risk is less. That, you know, the time isn't ticking. You're not going to start hitting an overtime charge. So all of that drives you in the other environment to bring your A game, I suppose.
Yeah. And having that flexibility, I mean, you know, I remember being in the studios and it just wasn't working. Yeah. You know, there was everyone was trying, but there was a great disappointment. I think we ended up outside by, is it Ransom's Docks? Had the kind of a brick dock out the back. And that was, it absolutely changed everything about it. It wasn't just obviously that the outlook was very different, but there were suddenly bags being lifted and picked up and a complete change of direction. And it came together and it started working.
Yeah. I think, again, there's often the, that moment of, I don't know what the word is, where it's, I suppose, where it's just a little bit less scripted is, again, it's excitement. It comes down to excitement, and then it can be the catalyst to then,
because it was, it wasn't terrible, but it was just not getting that
vanilla,
kind of,
probably.
That's exactly what it was. And there was that kind of moment of how are we going to do the afternoon differently. Having that kind of confidence to move around.
Can I tell you a really interesting story, actually? So George Smith's winning British Hairdresser of the British Hairdresser of the Year men's collection last year. George and I had, we were actually working at the Tony and Guy Academy. I don't know, have you ever been there?
No.
It's on the top floor. So it's in Oxford Street, top floor. And then above that, there's a roof. And we'd been in there and we'd been shooting, God knows how many hours, 4 or 5 hours. And it was, the important thing here to mention is we were delivering everything that we wanted to go and deliver. You know, that in terms of inspiration, direction, we were doing it. But it also probably wasn't exciting us enough. And I looked and I said, you know what, George, why don't we just shoot something very, very clean, very simple. We'll just run outside. No lights, everything else stayed the same. Hair was the same. And we had the poly boards, 8 foot by 4 foot white poly boards. And we stuck one up against the wall. And the model is actually having to sort of lean back.
Hold it in place.
Yeah, because the wind is going. And, you know, there's everyone in their offices sort of looking down. And we shot so quickly. I mean, like minutes, like 2 minutes, 3 minutes per model. And then when we got to the post-production, we actually went in the other direction. And this was arguably the backup or plan B. Mm. And then we got to looking at it. And the more we looked at it, we just thought, there's something really special in this. And that's what we ended up going for. So I think that always having something up your sleeve is a good...
I think that's kind of fighting that complacency and like say, vanilla. It's a lot. It's very easy to settle for that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think the other thing there as well is that often, particularly in a collection, you're often looking at, you want things to gel and to be part of a collection. So you start to then we, in this particular shoot that I was referencing, we had shards of light, which is great for one or two images. But then, when you're 8 or 12 looks in, and you look at it and it's just like, they all look the same.
Yeah.
You need something to mix up, whether it's the crop, whether it's the angle, there's a million different sort of different ways to skin it. But you need to look left and right, not just down the middle.
So presumably there's people listening to this that are thinking about doing their first collections. I hope they are. Or getting involved in, magazine work or something. So you've got those two very different arms as a hairdresser or as a barber. If you're in charge of the collection, you're the client and that brings with it one thing. But if you're working with photographers on something else, you're part of the team.
Yeah.
How important does the hairdresser's opinion reflect, do you think, when it's not a collection, when you're doing something that's more, something that's editorial, something that's more...
Well, I think it's, it's a tricky one, that, because I think that there are times when often, I suppose it depends on how many people are in the room, given their opinion. Okay. And I think that they're, When I look back at sort of editorials that I've shot, even in the last year, you're up against it. As a photographer, you're up against it. And then, often there's an art director who's got an opinion. And then there's a creative director who's got an opinion. Then the makeup artist has got an opinion. And then the hairdresser throws in another opinion. And at one point, you know, I think my tolerance at that point can, you not in a...
This is where too many chefs really does kick in. Yeah,
but you know what you end up with as well? Mm. You end up with vanilla.
Yeah.
You know, and
just trying to keep everybody happy.
Yeah. And I think that it also properly gets in my head because so as a photographer, obviously, my thing is I'm trying to have the relationship with the model first and foremost, trying to get them to relax, trying to direct them. And often, you know, you hear on the left-hand side, you know, left shoulder, someone saying, you know, I might be saying, you know, put your chin down. And then you hear someone on the left go, oh, it looked really good when it was up. And then you've got some, and then the hairdresser wants to say something else. So I think that I suppose in that world, it's important to, again, to stay true to what you really believe and make sure that the hair is always good. But there is a... I suppose there's a time and a place to ensuring that, you know, you're getting the job done, but that you're not adding too many flavors.
But do you think that studio experience is important? So if you're doing a first, you know, if you're, you know, you've got your store, you know, you're doing some great work, you've got a good team and you feel your group's ready to embrace an awards, or you feel you need to get your own imagery, you don't want to just be using product companies' looks and you want to do your own thing. You know, you're going into a studio, you know, essentially you're becoming a client for the first time. You're going into the studio for the first time.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's, and again, it's when you get put out of your comfort zone, you know, and I think that, you know, there's a head, I mean, I've done it for years, do you remember we used to have those sort of education program, inspirational year?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was, and I think that taught me a lot. But, you know, and also recently, you know, I've been working a lot with like Newcomer of the Year. So we've got a couple of finalists in for British Hairdressing Award, Newcomer of the Year. And that, to me, it's a very exciting experience. I really enjoy the communication with someone that is setting out to try and find their style. And I think that, you know, I've been super fortunate that there's a finalist that pops into my mind now called Annabelle Payne. I worked with her for 2 or 3 years, and the first shoot that I ever had a conversation with, you know, actually it was her and George Smith together. And I remember it was COVID time, and I remember jumping on a Zoom, and there was a fantastic PR that put me in contact with them. And there's the four of us on the call. Actually, I think the first time maybe it was just George and I. And I remember asking the questions, you know, what excites you? Where, you know, what do you see? Where do you, you know, where is this collection going? If you could do anything. And I, you know, I hope that neither of them would mind me saying, but there was a little bit of blankness. And then by the second conversation, it immediately turned around. And then by the, you know, like the third, the fourth, the fifth and beyond. And then, you know, sort of 3 or 4 years later of working together, they now come with the ideas. They know exactly what it is. They develop their style, their commitment, their passion to not only to, you know, to understanding what sort of excites them and where their sort of creative buzz lies, but also the you know, the technical skill with it. And that's an amazing experience to be able to watch someone sort of go from 0 to 100 in a very short space of time. You know, I think when I think about, you know, my career, you know, as I suppose as a photographer, and I suppose, you know, my career was always sort of multi sort of dimensional. There was a lot of production involved, and then obviously the image and the photography as well. But when I look at the photography alone, I was useless. probably for at least 9 years.
Just as well, you're not your own critic, your own best critic, isn't it? Yeah.
But then you get to a point where things click. Mm. And it's, you know, people always talk, whether it's riding a bike, it's the same thing, right? It's the same thing driving a car. You're useless. You don't understand it. You're the sort of, you know, the dexterity isn't there. And I suppose no one ever really knows what the sort of tipping point is, but then all of a sudden it does make sense. Yeah. So I think absolutely, you're only ever going to learn by putting yourself in the deep end and you know, 2 foot first and jump in and see where you end up. But I think the key to it is never give up.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. You can't grow without you know, pushing yourself.
And, you know, I think the most important thing there is all of us, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure you're exactly the same on this. As creatives, there will never, the day that you walk away from a shoot or from a haircut or from a collection, or whatever it is that we do, you look at it and you go, couldn't have done better than that. That I've absolutely nailed that. That's the day you die.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is. You know, for us, we have
to. You've got to keep pulling that thread and pulling that
100%.
Thread.
100%. And every day you will look at it and you will think, you know what, next time, or I should have done this differently. Or what if I'd changed that? And that's the bit that inspires us daily, I'm sure.
Yeah. We'll hopefully get everyone thinking.
Yeah.
Booking studio time.
Yeah.
Working it up. Really, really lovely talking to you, mate.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe. If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help, stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.